There were other measurable costs to being despised. Late in 2000, an Alabama state jury deliberating a civil fraud case handed down a $3.42 billion punitive damages verdict against ExxonMobil for allegedly cheating the state of natural gas royalties. Ken Cohen and other lawyers at the company were adamant that the verdict would be thrown out on appeal, and it was, but the case offered a reminder, if one was needed after the Exxon Valdez jury trial, that public skepticism toward the company could easily present itself in a courtroom in the form of hostile jurors. Cohen's group commissioned public opinion surveys, opinion leader focus groups, and other elaborate research endeavors designed to map the ways in which ExxonMobil was hated. Engineers ran the company, and only numbers could persuade them. Even so, some of the corporation's executives, including Raymond, received the insights from these scientific surveys and focus groups with undisguised skepticism about their usefulness. If a survey reported progress in ExxonMobil's reputation in comparison to, say, Chevron, Raymond would comment, "Just remember, Chevron is having the same meeting today, and their guys are saying exactly the opposite of what you just said." The more he learned about the details of public opinion surveying, how, for example, survey questions had to be asked exactly in the same form for the results to be comparable, the more Raymond doubted its validity as science. He did not want to ignore it entirely, and budgeted for continual internal opinion surveys, but he declared that it would not drive his decision-making. "If you start to play to that kind of thing, where does that end?" All oil companies saw their reputations rise and fall mainly as a function of whether retail gasoline prices were high or low, Raymond believed. The rest was just noise. Cohen accepted that the public's sense of being vulnerable to volatile gas prices, and more generally, to the power of big oil corporations, was nearly universal. The implication, he concluded, was that ExxonMobil should seek to be credible rather than popular. The corporation's communication should be clear, consistent, and fact-based. ExxonMobil's leaders and employees should accept that there would be many people who did not like what they had to say about public issues, but some of the company's skeptics might nonetheless be persuaded to accept that the corporation's positions were the product of empirical analysis. Global oil production was indispensable to the American economy. In that respect, it was very different from, say, the manufacture of addictive tobacco products or the promotion of a particular image of a youthful lifestyle through the sale of soft drinks. The resurrection of ExxonMobil's reputation could not be regarded as a marketing goal equivalent to the establishment of a new soft drink brand, Cohen told his colleagues. It should be seen as an outcome of consistent, credible communication in the face of predictable and persistent public skepticism. During the Aceh crisis, Robert Haynes, the manager of international government relations who worked for Cohen out of the Washington office, held regular off-the-record meetings with representatives of Human Rights Watch to hear the organization's concerns and to try to persuade its investigators that ExxonMobil was doing everything it could to control the conduct of the Indonesian military. Haynes used the sessions to present ExxonMobil's brief about the conflict. The corporation was a guest in the country. Its security arrangements were a requirement of its contract. ExxonMobil exercised no control over the TNI, and the corporation did not condone human rights violations. Yet Cohen and Lee Raymond had still not signed the Voluntary Principles on Security and Human Rights developed in 2000 by the Clinton administration and the Blair government in Great Britain. They may have wondered whether the Bush administration would abandon the initiative, but as it turned out, Bush developed a strong interest in human rights issues, and in 2002, his administration embraced the Voluntary Principles as official policy. Around that time, Ken Cohen decided that he should revisit ExxonMobil's decision about the Voluntary Principles and begin to think more deeply about how the corporation could improve its credibility on human rights questions. On one of his regular trips to Washington, Cohen invited Mike Jendrizek, the director of Asia Advocacy at Human Rights Watch, and his colleague, Arvind Ganeshan, to dinner at the Four Seasons Hotel in Georgetown. Ganeshan was a lawyer. Jendrizek, as one of his colleagues put it, had the charm of a con man, the energy of a 5-year-old, and the persistence of a used car salesman. That was not exactly the personality profile cultivated by ExxonMobil in its lifelong employees, but Cohen had learned to accept human rights and environmental activists as he found them. The violence in Aceh was continuing. Cohen refused to discuss the specifics of ExxonMobil's natural gas operations there. The lawsuit filed on behalf of some of the province's torture victims was now pending in federal court, and Ganeshan and other activists had learned that if they raised Aceh specifically in private meetings with Exxon officials, they received silence and a meeting-over look. On global human rights, more generally, however, Cohen saw the Four Seasons dinner as an opportunity to open a dialogue. His message was, as Ganeshan recalled it, "We're doing a great job, but we think we need to be more engaged." Cohen invited Ganeshan to speak at an off-site retreat for about 75 rising ExxonMobil managers. The executives were senior enough to have earned an internal designation as gold or platinum level leaders. Their reward was a multi-day public relations boot camp at a corporate retreat center in Norwalk, Connecticut. Other corporations retreated to semi-tropical golf resorts. At ExxonMobil, there was Norwalk. Ganeshan traveled there on October 27, 2002. He had attended corporate retreats before, but the ExxonMobil event struck him as one of the strangest in his experience. He felt that he was in a classified facility. He was not allowed to enter the meeting room until his speaking time arrived, and he was ushered out immediately afterward. The atmosphere seemed clinical. Later, he was told that he had been invited not only so that the managers could hear his views about oil corporations and human rights, but also so that he could provide a kind of live exercise in how to deal with a social activist.